Start at the end of the Seder and work back. Yosef gives his brothers a code, how they'll know when the real Goel comes. And they said that the person who will say, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem, Pakod Pakadati Eschem, he would use that double lashon, you'll know he's the right one. And could be that it was passed down secretly and nobody knew or whatever. Tzelzer HaShiva says not just a code, but there was something more significant about it. And that is that the real Goel will have to understand that it's not only that now God woke up and decided to redeem you, but God was involved all along in the Shibud itself. Just like we mentioned a few times already, that if you don't understand the purpose of the Tzara, there's no purpose to thank God for the Yeshua. Because if somebody breaks your legs and heals you, you don't owe him any thank you. But if the reason he broke your legs is because that's part of the refuah, it's part of the healing process, you have to break the legs and reset them, then you thank him for breaking the legs too. So the real Goel would have to understand, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem. Not only is God going to remember you in the future when he redeems you, but all along the way, all through the Shibud, God was remembering you. He didn't forget you and abandon you and all of a sudden decide to wake up. But it was all part of a process where what appeared to be bad was part of the good and what appeared to be good was part of the good too. That's the idea of Pakod Yifkod. It's interesting that the Sfarim say, I don't remember, it's a Medrash that says that all of the Geulas are based on the final letters of the Aleph Beis. The Mem, Nun, Sadik, Pei, Chof. The final Geula is Nun, Nun, Nachamu, Nachamu. So even though they're both regular Nuns, but they represent the fact that there's two different kinds of Nuns, Nachamu, Nachamu. The first Geula was Pakod Yifkod, double pay. The Geula before that was Lech Lecha, original Geula from Galus to Yeretz Israel, double Chaf, Lech Lecha. And what do we skip? We have the pay, the Nun, the Chaf. Tzadik was, I don't remember, Mem, Nun, Pei, Tzadik, that's it, and that's Echad, Tzadik, and Chaf. So the, what's it called, the tzaddik, I don't remember which geula that was for. Obviously, it was for Bayesheni in Ezra's time. I don't remember what that was for. But those are the letters of geula. Okay. Something else from the end of the Sedra. Yeah.
If Papa Yifko is saying that everything that was in the breaking process is part of the healing process, then what is Mitzrayim guilty of? They
have
added some breaking of their own.
Right. So the Rishonim asked this question. They ask it from a different standpoint. God already prophesied that Yadoa Teidah Ki Ger Yezaracho Beretz Olohem. It was a divinely ordained prophecy. So the Egyptians were just fulfilling a prophecy.
The simplest
answer is, that first of all, no one asked them to do it. Right? They didn't do it, and they didn't do it to fulfill God's prophecy, nor to do good for the Jewish people. Their intention was evil. A person is rewarded and punished for the choices he makes, moral choices, good or bad. Right? If somebody happens to chance upon somebody in the street and decides he wants to break his legs, for malicious purposes. But it turns out that the guy had some kind of disease, and by breaking his legs, he did him a favor. The person who broke his legs is going to be punished, right, for breaking his legs. Even though the result was a good result. Okay. Which brings me to another thing that I wasn't planning speaking about, but since you asked the question, it's very relevant, and we'll speak about it at length. That's what Yosef told the brothers. Atem chashavtem l'ra, you meant for bad, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it work for the good. And therefore, you don't really need to be mochel you. Yosef made the mistake that you made. Because of that, Klal Yisrael suffered. This is what I'm going to tell you now from Rav David Kronglass. What?
All of a sudden it's me and not the Rishonim.
Right. Rav David Kronglass said the following. He's a Mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael. So I heard from one of his Talmidim the following vort. I think I even saw it written that they, after he died, they wrote some Svarim of his things. I think I saw it there. I have a very big question on it, but I have an answer to the question too. He says like this. It says that whenever Rabbi Akiva came to the following pasuk, he would cry. What was the pasuk? Isha ha'feiram v'Hashem yislach lo. What's the background of the pasuk? A woman made a nether. She made a nether, she's not going to eat chocolate cake. And her husband heard the nether on the day that she made it, and he was made for the nether, but he didn't tell her. So she thought she still had the nether. And she held out for a while, and then she ate a chocolate cake. So she felt that she was over her nether. The husband tells her, you thought you were over the nether, but you really weren't, because I was made for the nether, there was no nether. So Torah says, Isha hafeiram, even though her husband nullified the nether, but since she didn't know, and she thought that she was doing something wrong, Hashem yislach la, God has to forgive her. No, she needs kapara, she needs tshuva. Okay. From that we learn, Niskaven lecho boser chazir, if a person intended to eat treif, but by accident he ate kosher, thinking of his treif, he needs kapara. Same exact case. Okay. So whenever Rabbi Akiva would come to that pasuk, he would cry. Why? Because if Yosef had known that, he would have been mochel the brothers. Had he been mochel them, it would have taken away completely the blemish of Mechiras Yosef. But Yosef said, you don't need to be mochel. I don't need to be mochel you. You intended for the bad, but it worked out for the good. You don't need any mechila. Because he never was mochel them, but he made a mistake to think that he didn't have to be mochel them, so there was still a blemish. That blemish somehow had to be corrected. How was it corrected? With the Asara Ruge Malchus. Who was one of the Asara Ruge Malchus? Rabbi Akiva. That's how Rabbi Akiva cried when he came to that pasuk. Prophetically, he saw with Ruach HaKodesh, or he sensed he's going to suffer because of this halacha. What? What do you mean good kavanas?
Is that the way they look at
Hold on just a second. You're two steps ahead of me. So that's assuming, right, that they really needed kapar, according to this vort. Both the Svarno and the Orachaim HaKadosh say that the brothers, that Yosef was right. He did not have to give them mechila. Didn't have to give them mechila. The Orachaim HaKadosh says the following. It's like somebody who wants to give somebody poison and by mistake gives him wine. Does he need kapara? Says the Orachaim HaKadosh, no. So too, they wanted to harm Yosef, but in the end it was to his benefit. And therefore, they didn't need any kapara. Yosef was right. What does the Orachaim HaKadosh do with this Gemara? So, in understanding the Orachaim, right, we can say the following, and then we can still say that Rabbi Kronglass said is right, okay? Even though the Orachaim Kodesh says that Yosef was right. So if Yosef was right, then the whole vort of Rabbi Kronglass goes down the drain, okay? Yosef was right, but he was wrong. Why? What's the reason why, if somebody intends to eat treif, but eats kosher by mistake, needs kapara? So if you remember, we once spoke about the two functions of every Avera. There's the doctor function and the king function. From the doctor function, you don't need any kapara, right? Because if you intend to eat poison, but by accident you drank wine, no harm is going to come to you. So you don't need any kapara from the essence of the sin. What do you need kapara for? You intended to rebel against God. The rebellion itself is a sin. You intended to eat treif. So you intended to rebel. So you need kapara because of the rebellion. That only applies between man and God. But there's no issur to attempt to rebel against your friend. Against your friend, there's only a prohibition of harming him. But if you intend to rebel against somebody, there's no prohibition, right? If you didn't harm him or do anything, right? Just the intent doesn't affect your bein olam l'chaveru. That can only be bein olam l'makom, memela. What the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is saying is the following. It's true, Yosef didn't have to be mochel his brothers because they didn't do any bad to him. They only intended to do bad. The actual doing of the bad didn't come out, therefore they don't need kapara. Elamai, they intended to do him bad. There's no isser to intend to do somebody bad. They not in the chaveru, but they not in the makom. Yes, 1 second.
7 years, so
what?
I mean, as a slave,
but true. Okay, so while I was saying this about 5 minutes ago, your question was bothering me. But I think the answer to that is you have to let Yosef speak for himself. In other words, if Yosef would have felt, you know, you really did me bad because the 7 years or whatever, 10 years, 12 years, I suffered in prison or whatever. But Yosef, looking back at it, said, you intended bad, but it worked out for the good. Meaning that all the bad I went through, I consider good. I don't really consider it like I get anything bad from that. It all was good, kapara, whatever it was for me. I accept it, right, that I needed that. So I don't even look at it as bad. Okay? So Yosef himself said, Elokim chashava letova. So if Yosef says, I consider whatever happened to me good, then he has the right to say that. So in any case, but, so how about Rav Dovid Kronglas? So then Yosef was right. He didn't have to give him kapara. So why was there Asura Gemalchus? Because he was right in that he didn't have to give him kapara. But God had to give him the kapara because they intended to do something that God didn't want them to do. You know, kill a brother or whatever. So therefore, Yosef should have said, look, you don't need kapara from me because when it comes to Bein Aron L'Chaveiro, the intention to do bad doesn't necessitate kapara. Only the actual doing of bad. But God, it's a different story. There, you need kapara because you intended to rebel against God. He told you not to do these things. And you intended to do something against me. That's a rebellion against God. So you better ask him mechila. But they understood that if Yosef does not do mechila, they don't have to go to God either. And because they never asked mechila, they never got a complete kapara. So even according to Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, it works out. He's talking about Bein Aron L'Chaveiro, and this is Bein Aron L'Makom. However, there's a Sfarno. The Sfarno seems to say what you're saying. The Sfarno says like this, that here they intended for the good. And it worked out for the good. When do you need kapara if you intended bad and it worked out for the good? But if you intended good and it worked out for the good, then there's no need for kapara. What's the idea? Even Bein Aron L'Makom. Why? Because we said, if a person intends to do good, but he made a mistake. Okay, he thought that it was Sunday, and he, lit a fire. But it was really Shabbos. So he needs kapara. Why does he need kapara? Not because between man and the king, God and the king, because you didn't intend to rebel against the king, you thought it was Sunday, you made a mistake. But the Aveira itself has a negative reaction. Right? If you intend to eat something good, and by accident you ate poison, you're going to need to get a refuah. Doesn't make a difference if you did it on purpose or not. The Maishia ate the poison. Okay, so that's why Shogeg needs kapara, because the sin itself, the essence of the sin, makes an impression. The other way around, where you intend to do something bad, but it works out for the good, you only need kapara because you intended to rebel against God. Now if you put the two together, I intended to do something that I thought was good, but was really bad, but it ended up good. Then on both sides, you don't need kapara. Because I didn't intend to rebel against God. I thought I was doing God's will by getting rid of this rodef, right? Like we said. And in the end, it didn't work out for the bad. So on either side, is there no need for kapara? I think that's what the Sfarno says. According to that, Rabbi Kronglass's word doesn't have any place.
But the wrong title is, you
Okay, but that was with the kapara, but that's not his vort.
Yeah.
Unless you say what we said 2 weeks ago, that if it had been an honest mistake, they really felt honestly that they were doing the right thing, but they made a mistake, right? They thought it was Sunday and it was really Shabbos. Then they maybe would not need kapara if it worked out for the good. However, we said it wasn't an innocent mistake. It's because they were jealous that they made that mistake. Therefore, they were punished for it. So you can't say that they really... In other words, if the reason I think that it's Sunday and not Shabbos is not just because of an honest mistake, because I don't want to think it's Shabbos for some reason, right? I want to think it's Sunday. I've pushed myself, right, for ulterior motives to think it's Sunday, then that's not an honest mistake. And that's not intending to do bad. That's like intending to do bad. So that would have to be the answer according to that. Okay, that's what they did tshuva, not 100%. You can only do tshuva if you really realize that you did something wrong.
But they recognized. But if they saw things happening to them, they said no.
100%. But at the end, in the end, Yosef said, right, you don't really need kapara. So they never took it to the nth degree. Because Yosef told them, don't worry about it. You really don't need that much tshuva. Had they known that they really did something terrible and they needed tshuva to the nth degree, they would have done it. But at that point, they slacked off.
They defended Binyamin, that's not the tshuva?
No. They didn't repeat the sin. But they didn't repeat the sin. But real, complete tshuva, they were curtailed because of what Yosef told them. It's according to that vort, at least. Now, it says in the end of the Sedra that they suspected that Yosef, after Yaakov died, was going to take revenge on them. And that he was going to pay them back for everything that they did to him. He just was waiting until Yaakov died. Didn't want to do it during Yaakov's lifetime. That's pretty serious. I mean, Yosef was nice to them for 17 years. He had them by the throat. He could have done anything, and he didn't. Why were they chosh at him? Why did they suspect that he was going to do terrible things with him, for them? So the Medrash says there were two reasons. One is, we'll speak about one of them first, and the second one is that when they came back from the funeral, they passed by the place in Eretz Yisrael, where they sold him, the boor that they threw him into. And Yosef went over to the boor and made a bracha, Sha'asali Neis B'Makom Hazeh. And the brother said, he still remembers. And therefore, what's it called? We're afraid to take revenge. Now that seems absurd. What do you mean? They thought he forgot it? Right? There's just a little, you know, little incident in his life that he probably forgot about long ago. How could he ever forget, you know, being sold by his brothers? Even if he didn't take revenge, he didn't forget about it. Wait, you're a step ahead. So, because he remembered, that's why they thought he was going to take revenge. Now, the idea, I think, is the following. They understood, and they say it in this lashon, Lu yistameinu Yosef. Lu means halavai. Halavai, Yosef will hate us now and take revenge. Or halavai. Whenever you want something, you say something, perhaps, and you don't want it to happen, you say pen. Whenever you want it to happen, you say lu. What should they have said? Pen yistameinu. Chas v'shalom, Yosef's going to hate us now and take revenge. No, they didn't say that. They said lu yistameinu. Why? Because they understood that what Yosef did was for their good. The revenge he took was to, again, affect kapara, to give them more of a tshuva. There's an idea of tshuva samishko, that whatever you did has to be balanced out. You enjoyed Navera, you have to have some kind of tsar to nullify that enjoyment. Whatever you did somehow has to be counterbalanced. So Yosef really put them through everything that they put him through. Everything they did bad, Yosef put them through. So it counterbalanced and took away a lot of the sin. Okay? With the tshuva and the tshuva samishko, it helped to erase a lot of the blemish. So what did he do? accused him of being, a spy, literally, spying on them and trying to get rid of them. He accused them of the same thing. They knew what it felt like, right? He was thrown into prison because of them. He threw them into prison. What other things were specific to this, right? He was trying to steal their, what rightfully belonged to them. They accused them of stealing. And they just, you put them through this whole thing. However, all the things that he put them through did not atone for their desire to kill him. Why? Because they assumed that Yosef knew they never would have killed him. Right? They just said that in the heat of anger. But in the end, they were very easily convinced by Reuven not to kill him right out. And when Yehuda said, let's sell him instead, right away they agreed. They didn't really want to kill him. And they probably would have not killed him. That's what they felt. Right? And they figured Yosef understood that too. They weren't murderers. Right? With all the thing that they thought they were right, they weren't going to kill him. Right? They said it, but they never would have carried it out. And they felt that Yosef understood that. And therefore, the kapara that he gave them was basically for everything but wanting to kill him. That didn't do. There's a halacha that you only make a bracha shasim l'nesh makom hazeh if your life was in danger. If it wasn't a life-threatening thing, you don't make that bracha. So when they came back and he went over to the boar and made that bracha, they said, uh-oh. If he didn't think that we're going to kill him, he never should have made that bracha. But obviously, in retrospect, he thinks that his life was in danger. That's why he made that bracha. Right? And therefore, we're afraid that he hasn't given us a kapara yet for that aspect, because we thought that he understood that it never would have happened. But now that he made this bracha, halavai, he'll give us a kapara for that aspect too.
And you could say, have more
awake in Romani. Well, that's it. But they didn't know. Well, right. They didn't know, though, that beside their intentions, his life was in danger for a different reason, because there were nechashim and akravim in the boar. But they didn't know that, because they wouldn't have thrown him into a boar not to kill him if they knew there were nechashim and akravim. So when he made the bracha, he was making the bracha because of the nechashim and akravim. But they thought he was making the bracha because of them. That was the thing. Okay. I think that's a cute... that'll be after 120 years, also you can mention that one too. Okay. Huh?
He's innocent of everything, correct?
Right.
He has his brothers that conspire, and they won't kill him, not kill
him. Maybe he didn't know, I don't know.
And Yosef is, talking to them, the whole thing that's going on, and he finally comes down, and he sees...
First of all, Binyamin wasn't with them. When they sold him?
No, in the end.
Oh, in the end.
He's still a little boy in the
He's innocent of everything anyway. This is my brother. What are they saying here? I mean, not thanks to Yehuda for saving him.
Right.
He said, you meant to kill him, you meant to do this, and when Yosef was talking about them, I mean, he's the innocent bystander. And they're throwing in with saying the brothers, but he's not involved with us. We must think they're all crazy.
I don't know.
Does anybody say anything about it?
Not that I've seen. It's interesting. How did Binyamin react to all of this?
And he's not a child anymore. He's an adult already.
He's got 10 kids.
I hear. I don't know. It's interesting. Write a book on it. But the other thing the Medrash says is that Yosef started inviting them to eat. Now they thought it's because he wants to deny them food, and that'll be the kapara for wanting to kill him. That's already taking away their livelihood, like taking away your life. But the real reason why he did that is because he didn't know who to sit at the head of the table. As long as Yaakov was alive, Yaakov sat at the head of the table. So it was no problem. Now that Yaakov died, Yosef was the melech in Mitzrayim, kavod ha-malchus, right? He had Paro to worry about too. So really, he should have sat at the head of the table. But Yehuda's the melech of the family. So really, Yehuda has the... So he didn't know what to do. It says in Shulchan Aruch that there's a big shaila if a son is a bigger Talmud Chacham than the father, and the father is a Talmud of the son. Who stands up for who? Does the son stand up for the father, Al-Skibud Av, or does the father stand up for the son, Al-Skibud Rabbo? And it's not clear. They say the Maharam Rottenberg, from the time that he became the, what's it called, Rav in Rottenberg, right, he didn't have any contact with his father. He never saw his father because he wasn't sure who should stand up for who. And therefore he avoided the problem. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, then the Rambam brings down. So, if that's the case, what's it called? That was what Yosef said. I don't know if I'm supposed to defer to Yehuda, or Yehuda's supposed to defer to me. Either way, halachically, one of them is right, and I guess he had nobody to ask. So as long as Yaakov was alive, it was a moot question. That was Lamaisa. So he stopped inviting them, so he wouldn't have to sit at the same table with them, and maybe slight Yehuda, or maybe slight his Kavara Malchus. So, that was the real reason. But they thought the reason was he's taking the kum on them and taking away their livelihood, stopping feeding them. So,
isn't that true
same way.
Yaakov's life?
No, Yaakov sat at the head of the table.
Of course, you just said, like, the Maharal had a problem.
No, but the Maharam Rottenberg, but the, no, the Yaakov Avinu definitely was greater than all of them. Right? So even though he was the Melech, Paro understood that he has to give cover to his father. That was okay with Paro too. Because Paro also gave cover to his father. What?
It should have been okay for the Maharal as well.
No, because there, the Shaila was, I'm the Rebbe and you're the father. Which comes first, the Rebbe or the father? Right? Over here, even Paro recognized that he gave cover to Yaakov. Right? So I'm willing that, what's it called, Yosef should give cover to his father too, because I recognize the fact that I would give cover to Yaakov. But not the same thing to Yehuda. Okay. Huh? Okay. Next. Next, okay, one more short thing. Two more short things, maybe. It says, Asher lakachti mehu emori becharbi uvekashti. I took it with my sword and my bow and arrow. So the Targum says, bitzalusi ubausi. So the Meshech Chochma and the Brisker Rav say pretty much the same idea. I just want to add a little bit to it. What they say is like this, there's two kinds of tefillah. There's the institutionalized tefillah, where the words themselves make the effects in heaven. Now, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola knew that there are various gates and doorways in heaven to open up the Shefa. How does it work? God said, look, I created this minagnon, what's it called?
These
mechanism, that's it. Mechanism for bringing influence into the world. Okay? All malachim and all different kinds of things that God showers his influence, but it goes through, what's it called, various pathways, various
mechanisms,
right, to come down to this world. However, the energy source, the batteries that run those mechanisms is our tefillah, mitzvahs, Torah, and so on. We're supposed to initiate the world should be able to function. This mechanism should function. So God is constantly influencing good. He wants it to come through specific pathways, and we're the ones who open the doors and make the gears work for those pathways to work. So each word in tefillah, each letter at a certain time, a certain place, opens doors to this, to let this influence come into the world. It's like they have today computerized locks, right? Things that lock, that open the lock to a safe. When somebody's voice is programmed to say a certain word at a certain time, and when he says that word, the computer recognizes the voice pattern. It's at the right time, right? The right word, and the safe opens. Similarly, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola knew what words, at what time, in what sequence have this effect in the heavens and open these doors and these gates and whatever, and sets these mechanisms in force. There, the tefillah, that's the instant, that's why you have to say certain words, you have to say it at a certain time, and whatever. But then there's another kind of tefillah. That's the tefillah that comes from the heart. That's the tefillah we say at the end of Shemoneh Esrei. where there's no specific words. You make up the words. But there the main tefillah is the kavana. It's not the words that are effective. It's your kavana of how you feel and how you address the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Your kavana is the main thing. One is compared to a sword. The sword is sharp. You don't have to put too much force behind it. The sword itself cuts. A bow and arrow has no effect unless you pull it back, and the Katzke Rebbe says closer to your heart that you pull the arrow, the farther it goes. In other words, there's charbi, there's a kind of tefillah which is like a sword, institutionalized tefillah, which in itself is effective, the words are effective, and then there is the tefillah that a person makes up on his own, where the main thing is not the words, but it's the kavana. That's like a bow and arrow. That's kashti. I was thinking to add to that, it says that Klal Yisrael have two milas. One is that we have a Torah, and the other one is that we have a, what's it called, the Rabbanu Shel Olam answers us whenever we daven, as a klal. Okay, it says, Mi goy gadol asher lo Elohim krovim elav, kashem elokeinu b'chol koreinu elav, Mi goy gadol asher lo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim. We have a Torah, and we have the koach of tefillah. Okay. If you look at the words, b'char bi, you can also read it, b'char bi. The Rabbanu Shel Olam chose me. And Bikashti can be read Bakashasi, which the Targum Taka says. So Lusi Uba'usi. Ba'usi in Aramaic means Bakashasi, my Bakasha. The fact that we have a Torah, that's the Torah is what makes this effects in the heavens. And Tefillah, that's based on the concept of Torah, is also that kind of institutionalized Tefillah. God chose us that we're the ones that pull the strings in this world. That's Bicharbi, which is Bocharbi. And then there's Bikashti, which is Bakashosi, which the fact that the Rabbanu Shel Olam listens to our Bakasha because of our Kavana or whatever. So it's the same idea, but a little bit different based on this Pasuk, and the words can be read Bocharbi and Bakashosi. Those represent the institutionalized Tefillah and the more Kavanadika Tefillah.